and capfunds.com, and tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. for Money Making Monday.
It's time for the 60th annual Scottsdale Arabian Horse Show and Shopping Expo. February 12th through the 22nd, the finest Arabian horses from around the world will compete. You're sure to have an amazing time. Located at Westworld off Frank Lloyd Wright in the 101. Tickets are just $10, seniors $7, and children 12 and under are free. Plus, you can meet an Arabian horse and get a guided barn tour. The Scottsdale Arabian Horse Show. It's family fun at its finest.
Retire and stay retired, safe, smart, and secure. Call Secured Financial Solutions at 800-957-5604, extension 200, to get your complimentary guide to maximizing Social Security options and understanding Medicare benefits. 800-957-5604, extension 200, and on the web at theripa.com. Listen to On the Money with Anil Vazirani and Secured Financial Solutions every Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. and Thursdays at noon. Also, to be sure to catch Anil on Business for Breakfast Friday mornings at 6:45.
Do you need to sell your home and want to get top dollar using a proven marketing system? How about a guarantee to sell your home in 59 days or less? Be sure to listen to Brian from the Yelder team at Home Smart as he joins Ken Morgan on Business for Breakfast this and every Friday morning at 7:24 for a new segment called Buyers and Sellers. Brian will discuss preparation, marketing strategy, and what buyers are looking for to get your top dollar for your home. So tune in for Buyers and Sellers this and every Friday at 7:24 a.m. right here on Money Radio 1510 AM and 99.3 FM.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-299-1855. That's 800-299-1855. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-299-1855.
This show is brought to you by Discount Tire. Your low-price journey starts at Discount Tire.
The information and opinions expressed in this broadcast are intended to address specific questions asked or situations described on this program and are not designed to constitute advice or recommendations as to any disease, ailment, or physical condition. You should not act or rely upon any information contained in this broadcast without seeking the advice of your personal physician. If you have any questions about the information or opinions expressed during this broadcast, please contact your doctor.
Good afternoon, Arizona. It's time for Doctor Talk with Dr. Belinda Barclay-White, a board-certified radiologist who specializes in breast imaging and breast-related issues, and Dr. Carrie Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. This show is about your healthcare, your well-being, and your life. Get the latest information and answers to your questions from nationally recognized physicians and healthcare experts. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's Facebook.com/Dr. Talk. It's time for Dr. Talk with hosts Dr. Barclay-White and Dr. Bordinko.
So welcome back to Dr. Talk. I was absent last week, away at a very interesting conference on health and well-being and how to stop ourselves becoming sick. 75% of the diseases we suffer from and die with are actually induced by the way we eat and live and don't exercise and do all those things.
And we're so happy to have you back in the studio. Don't do that again.
Thank you. It's nice to be back. So our topic this week is a very sad topic, Alzheimer's, the most common form of dementia, a general term for memory loss and other intellectual abilities that are serious enough to interfere with our daily lives. And Alzheimer's disease accounts for 60 to 80% of dementia. And we will get into that a little bit.
Yeah, because I think for our listeners, you know, it's really common to talk about, you know, Uncle Joe or Grandpa had Alzheimer's. And that term is very loosely thrown around for even in the medical community. I think doctors are also sometimes a culprit to label somebody with the term Alzheimer's. And there's actual multiple dementias that can occur. And that's going to be a whole separate show, unfortunately, because there's just so much information we want to cover about Alzheimer's today. But when we use the term Alzheimer's today, we are really going to be giving our listeners the facts behind Alzheimer's, what those symptoms really do look like, what the testing is for Alzheimer's, and what the recovery prognosis and medications are. So if you've had someone in your family that's had a form of dementia, it's been labeled Alzheimer's, maybe after the show you'll want to go back and do a little bit more digging and see if that was an accurate term.
Absolutely. And as Carrie said, you know, most of the people that are affected are over 65, but about 5% of the population, or 5% of Alzheimer's cases, are in much younger people. And, you know, I personally had a friend who started suffering, you know, early 50s, and it was devastating. And unfortunately, none of us could really see it. It was the person that was closest to him that knew what was going on the earliest, and it sort of progressed from there's something not quite right to I think he's having an affair to no, this is, it was really interesting.
It is. Going through it. It is. And I think Alzheimer's, we're going to get into this with our guests in the studio today as well. But, you know, for many reasons, I think Alzheimer's is a late diagnosis for a lot of people. We don't know. We kind of come up with all these excuses why someone forgot how to get home from the grocery store. Or they can't find their keys. And then we make fun, you know, we're just getting old. And what we really are missing, some of those key indicators, which we're going to let our listeners know about later in the show today. What can you look for early on? So how can we jump on this early on and maybe change the trajectory of the illness for someone?
So, yes, we will certainly get into that. So we have two guests here in the studio, Dr. Michael Jasinski. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And
Sorry about that. Okay. Our other guest we appreciate you, Dr. Jasinski, helping us find another expert in the field that we can talk to about Alzheimer's. We also have in the studio today Dr. Mary Beth Gallagher, who's a board-certified psychiatric nurse practitioner with a doctorate of nursing degree as well. And she serves as the director of the dementia program at Hospice of the Valley, which is a really big hospice delivery system here. For those of you who are listening from out of state, that's one of the biggest in the country, actually. And she's been featured as a guest speaker at both national and international conferences, and she's published in several professional journals. She's also appeared in the New York Times and the New Yorker magazine. So welcome to our studios today, both our guests. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules.
Thanks.
Thank you for the opportunity to share really important information.
So let's start basically the causes of Alzheimer's. Really, do we know some of the causes, but can you, Michael, maybe sort of expand on that for our listeners? What do we know about Alzheimer's as of today?
Well, causes, you know, there's genetic inherited forms, which is the rare type. That's usually if you have someone who's really early on onset, presentations tend to be a very specific type of inherited disease.
But so more so under the age of 65.
Yeah, I mean, really under 60, 50s, and even mid-40s, you can get a inherited type, which is, I think, less than 1% of Alzheimer's diagnoses. The rest is not inherited. And, you know, at this point, I don't know if there's a clear road to preventing this. I think it's more obvious about what it looks like and how to manage it to a better degree.
Do we know yet, in the inherited type, you know, there's a lot of talk now about actually being able to modulate our genetic sort of outlook, right, by the things that we do differently. But do we know yet in Alzheimer's, if you have the gene, are there things that you can do to delay the onset of the disease?
I mean, the things I've been practicing or, you know, I've been involved in is exercise, diet, like you mentioned, is two key practices. But I think using the mind over time, so people that are engaged in utilizing their mind to stay active. So I guess that's why a lot of programs are focusing on keeping the mind active even once the diagnosis has been made, to get people using their minds and not just let it kind of go to sleep, if you will. So the more active our minds are engaged in problem-solving types of activities, that seems to be, from my understanding, the best prevention we have in conjunction with diet and healthy lifestyle.
And certainly, you know, this weekend they were saying again and again that, you know, staying healthy from the point of view of not being obese, keeping, you know, blood pressure within limits, low cholesterol, et cetera, does have an effect on the onset of Alzheimer's. Yes?
Yeah, from my understanding, that's the key factors that I focus in on. I know I have people ask me, we share a patient, Carrie, that I know if someone's asked me, a family member of someone with Alzheimer's came to me a couple months ago and they were very concerned with all the things they could do to prevent that happening to them. And that's exactly what I went through. So I went through the diet and exercise and cholesterol and keeping your mind sharp.
And for Michael and I, because we do share a lot of patients, and we have some families that have the unfortunate diagnosis of having Alzheimer's running in their family members. You know, it sounds like on this station, I know that we're always saying the same thing, diet, exercise, eat right, you are what you eat. You know, but it's true.
Yes.
It's true in medicine. And you just can't get past that point because it's factual. So absolutely, Michael and I, a lot of times we'll talk to people. You know, we don't always know what that gene is to turn it on or off. But we do know if you take better care of your body, you're less likely to have any of the diseases. So Alzheimer's just being another one to add to
sure.
the list, just like cardiovascular disease and just like diabetes, and go down a litany of problems that we suffer from in American society.
Yeah, the common cancers. I mean, the meeting I was at this weekend, it was the Harvard Public of Health, and they have amazing statistics about all of this stuff. And it all links back so often to obesity, you know, exercise levels. And it's just fascinating. And they are saying that this is going to be the new, you know, the way we go forward is understanding what we're doing to ourselves by how we're living.
So let's jump forward and let's help our listeners understand what are the symptoms. I think we've kind of led up to this right now, but if you have a family member, if you have a coworker, if you have someone that you're close to and they're exhibiting what, should we be maybe thinking, this is an early symptom?
Go ahead. Well, I kind of have four domains I look at, just real quick, though. I mean, you look at the memory. So the biggest ones, practicality or, you know, forgetting your keys is kind of the most common one to look for. So kind of short-term memory. The next domain is language, so word finding is probably the most common one I see. Next set is we call executive function or planning, so inability to cook a meal or follow a recipe or pay their bills are all really easy ones to spot. And then the one that people don't think of is more of the psychiatric or behavioral symptoms. So they're more depressed, they're apathetic, they're not motivated. Those are all signs that can occur before any of the memory problems come up. So those are the domains I look at.
And let's come back to that thought, because there's some other things that can cause all of those symptoms. But we'll come back to that after the break. Do you dread having your annual screening mammogram? For a totally different experience, give Arizona BreastNet a call. Our all-female staff provides you with years of expertise and immediate results in a clean, state-of-the-art, spa-like facility that respects your mind, your body, and your time. If, on the other hand, you have a new breast lump or breast-related finding, call Arizona BreastNet today for an immediate appointment and consultation with a doctor who will give you your results at the time of your visit. At Arizona BreastNet, you will never have to wonder, worry, or wait. Get your results today and call 480-314-7600. That's 480-314-7600 for an immediate appointment, or you can visit us online at breastnet.net for more information.
When you're driving down the road, the last thing you want to think about is tires. Trust Discount Tire to get you up to speed with the right tire for your vehicle. We carry the world's best brands of tires, all at everyday low prices. At Discount Tire, we're not just about tires, we're about people. We'll get you the right tire for your vehicle to help keep you safe on the road. Stop by any Discount Tire store for a free air pressure and tire safety check. Your low price journey starts here. Discount Tire.
Your healthcare
your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
So welcome back to Dr. Talk. We're talking this week about Alzheimer's. And before we went into the break, Dr. Jasinski was giving us a list of the early symptoms of onset, such as short-term memory loss, not remembering the names of our staff and friends, and sort of all those
depression things.
Depression.
And I said, it sounds an awful lot like menopause.
Absolutely like menopause, because actually when I went into menopause, I thought I had Alzheimer's because it all sounded so good. So yes, absolutely. But how do we distinguish those other problems from a true Alzheimer's situation?
I mean, I think the biggest thing I see and what I always do with patients is they come in. You're right. You almost have three or four doctors to see once you start having these symptoms. I think you need to rule out all the stuff. So menopause, you got to go see your OB or a doctor like yourself, get hormones checked. You need to look for, you know, different vitamin deficiencies can cause problems, like vitamin B12. Go see a good internist. As a psychiatrist, I look for, or maybe this person's struggling with depression that's looking like Alzheimer's or memory loss. And so we treat all of the what we can find that's treatable. And then what's left, if nothing resolves, we have a better idea that these deficits that we might be seeing have to be explored. In that case, sometimes I find a good neuropsychologist who can do some more distinct testing, kind of pen and paper, if you will, or computer-based testing that really hones in on the different aspects of the cognitive problems or the memory problems. And then there's imaging available, and we put that all together and clarify the diagnosis.
And for the imaging that you're referencing, on one of our earlier shows about a half a year ago, we actually had an imaging specialist in, and part of that show was talking about the new innovations in imaging surrounding some of the cognitive disorders, Alzheimer's being one of them. And that was the Amyvid scan, which came out in February of 2013. It was approved by the FDA. I think it's a scan that a lot of practitioners still don't know much about unless they really specialize. So is that a scan that you use in your practice? Are you familiar with it? Have you had good success with it?
It's great as a, you know, a confirmatory tool. I think I've had it used both ways. So it picks up basically these plaques in the brain that are amyloid plaques from that's indicative of Alzheimer's disease. So once you string together, you have the set of symptoms and the suspicion for it. To me, it works great as a confirmatory test. Some people want to go get their head scan for Alzheimer's without any symptoms just because they're scared they might get Alzheimer's, where you can have some of these plaques with no problem.
Symptoms.
So, I mean, you got to have a good doctor that understands the use of the test like any other test. It's a piece of the puzzle, but it's a very powerful piece because I think it adds some level of certainty, and people like something they can see on an image to understand the disease.
Right, and it's not an inexpensive test, and it's rarely covered by any insurance. I think the prices I've seen are anywhere between $4,000 and $5,000 for that scan. So, like you said, sitting down with a good group, a good team that's helping you understand where your symptoms are coming from, and then using that as part of the diagnosis is probably the best way to spend those funds.
You know, I'd just like to add, even though I specialize in the back end of the disease, that it is such a frightening idea to go in and to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's that when people have memory problems, they're afraid to go in and tell their doctors, some of them. So it's important to remind the listeners that just because you have memory problems doesn't mean you have dementia.
Right.
They mentioned other causes, but sleep apnea that's undiagnosed, the medications that you're prescribed or even over-the-counter medications.
Absolutely.
So many reasons.
Benadryl.
So, yes. So there's so Tylenol PM.
Yes.
So many reasons. So don't be afraid and go in and know they're going to do a thorough physical exam. They're going to do the labs, and then they're going to go on with neuropsychological testing.
That's a good point. I think that's the most reversible cause I see.
Yeah.
It's just every day there's people on just a ton of meds that can be taken off and improved.
Yeah, and we're absolutely not trying to tell our listeners that taking those medications are bad, but I think it is a little underplayed by the consumer, certainly by the media, that, you know, just go, you know, I'm running through a field, I have hay fever, I'm you know, itching, scratching, sneezing, let me just go get this medication. No one ever really sits back and thinks about what could it cause that now I'm going to have to deal with. So, you know, we always say on the show, go back in, sit down, talk with your primary, discuss the problems openly, which is what you're saying. Don't hold back. Mm-hmm. Put it all out there so that they can do their job and help you understand what is this really going on. So, yeah, memory is a scary event for everyone.
So are we still doing CSF proteins and things like that, so lumbar punctures, or has that really gone by the wayside now? Or do you have to do that to make the diagnosis?
It's never really come up as an issue with the scan available. I have not had anyone do that. I know it exists. I just don't personally, you know, I haven't found the need to get that for a confirmatory test. Carrie, I don't know. Do you have any?
Not anymore. No, I think right now.
I don't see it often, frankly.
Right now, we're involving, like, once again, the team concept, I think, in any memory issue is really important. Having good logs, having good input from the family members around the person, because you might be asking somebody who has difficulty recalling events what they recall and what they don't. So having a separate meeting with family, peers, coworkers to say, what are you noticing? And you're not asking them to sit there and be tattletales, but really help that person along, because then you can define it. And once again, when we started the show, you know, we talked about the fact that there's many other kinds of dementias. This show is on Alzheimer's, and we want to stay close to that. But once again, so many of these, the type of dementia can be sorted out by the history that you get from the family member around them.
And there's also a piece, just real quick. Of course, people don't want their memory to be gone, but the part of the disease itself, you have a problem with insight in and of itself. So part of that is lacking in general. So you're going to have family members who, as the disease progresses, the insight, they're literally unable to see the obvious. So not only whatever they see, they're going to defend against, but they're not able to see the obvious. And it's going to sometimes be confrontational, but you need to involve the families and confront these concerns, because the person is not going to see them themselves typically.
So what can a family member do sort of legally and emotionally to support the patient who doesn't want to address these things? Where do you start? Mary Beth, can you maybe give some insight into that?
Well, that's really a tough one. If I lack insight and my judgment is poor and I don't think I have a problem except that you're my problem,
right?
It's very, very difficult to get in. And so I would say that I advise families to, in bullet points, put down the evidence of where the person is differing from their baseline behavior, thinking, and functioning, and to maybe ahead of time fax it or email it to the doc or the nurse practitioner to give them a heads up, so that when the patient comes into the room, the family member doesn't have to feel that they're betraying their loved one and cause that confrontation. Because from a good cop, bad cop perspective, we want the family members always to be the good cop in alliance with that person.
So, Carrie, do you find that as a primary, in a primary role, that it's really difficult to sort of round up everybody and get that person into the doctor's office? I mean, how do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, you're almost talking about having interventions with people, and that doesn't come very easily these days. Everybody has busy schedules. But I think hopefully we can get better at doing that. I don't think it's occurring right now. Obviously, Michael and I work in a unique practice setting where we meet with people in their homes. So it's really easy for us to do it because we just call a family meeting. And that is becoming more common in medicine, I think, even in more traditional sense, where they're inviting other family members in, because this is one diagnosis where it is a family effort, you know, and we need to bring the family in to help understand what the support roles are going to be, also to counsel them on what the frustrations are going to be that they're going to experience. And a lot of times, I always say when I'm treating a dementia patient and an Alzheimer's patient, that I'm treating the family more than I'm treating the patient. I'm there for the patient, obviously, and we all are as providers, but I have to support the family because they're the ones truly experiencing the disease. The person with the cognitive decline or the memory problems is not really experiencing it to the same severity. So
because they're frustrated, as the family gets frustrated, the patient gets
more frustrated,
worse, yes. And they're frustrated. So helping the frustration of the family tends to be one of the more effective tools to actually inadvertently help the patient themselves.
Yeah. So when we come back into the next segment, we're going to go into a lot more detail about how the family can be helped in Alzheimer's disease. You're listening to Dr. Talk on 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, Money Radio. We'll be right back.
Can't you see I'm burning, burning?
Bottom of the hour, we pause for a look at the world's news. Then we're back with Money Talk. We're Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM.
Gunshots rang out today at a cafe in Copenhagen. The attack came during a debate about Islam and free speech. One person's dead. Three police officers were shot. Their injuries are reported to be non-life-threatening. The gunman on the run, correspondent Nick Robertson.
The information that we have is that these men are still on the loose. There are a lot of police out looking for them. And, of course, it's an absolute high priority for Danish authorities to get a hold of them because they don't know how many weapons they have and what else they might be planning or be prepared to do.
Also in attendance at that cafe was the French ambassador to Denmark. Parts of the U.S. are bracing for extreme cold and heavy snow. Blizzard warnings are in effect from Maine to New York as a powerful winter storm takes aim at New England. Meteorologist John Trout.
Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, New York. Wind chill warnings. It'll feel like 25 to 30 below zero tonight in these states.
The governor of Massachusetts urging people to stay off the roads. I'm Molly Page.
Did you pay to do your taxes this year? Or did you not pay to do your taxes because you filed them for free on TurboTax and then you had some money to spend on something else, like a miniature train set so you can give all your 2-inch-tall friends a ride to a tiny post office or something? Anyhow, how you do your taxes is up to you. But if you want to pay absolute zero, then hop on TurboTax.com and file your taxes for free. Intuit TurboTax. It's amazing what you're capable of.
For simple U.S. returns only, offer may end without notice. See offer details at TurboTax.com.
Ready to be amazed? Metro PCS is ready to give you unlimited 4G LTE high-speed data for $50, period. Taxes and regulatory fees included. All riding on T-Mobile's nationwide network. $50, period. No gimmicks, no annual contracts. But this offer is only available for a limited time. Only at Metro PCS. Available only on Metro PCS GSM LTE phones. BYOD phones not eligible. Coverage and services not available everywhere. Restrictions apply. See store or MetroPCS.com for details and terms and conditions of service.
This show is brought to you by Discount Tire. We carry the best selection of tires and wheels at everyday low prices.
Your healthcare, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
Welcome back to Dr. Talk. We're sitting here in the studio today with my co-host, Belinda Barclay-White, and we also have Michael Yasinski of Yasinski Psychiatry. And Mike, we completely forgot to tell our listeners how to learn more about you, so I'm going to redirect them now to your webpage, which is YasinskiPsychiatry.com. Mm-hmm. There is a wealth of information between your blogs and your media presentations. I mean, there's a lot. So check if you have out. Any questions about dementia, make sure you check that out. And also in the studio today, we have Mary Beth Gallagher with Hospice of the Valley, who's giving us some insight into the end process of Alzheimer's dementia. So we kind of left off talking about the family and the family's involvement and how we can be more supportive to the family. And that always brings up the legal issues surrounding the family. So,
sure.
Mike, talk about a little bit about what we can do to protect families and assets when it comes into a diagnosis of Alzheimer's.
I think it's a good transition because kind of from early stages to end stages, somewhere in the middle of that, someone goes and drains their entire checking account, buys 3 new cars even though they can't drive, and gives away money to everybody except the actual family members. And the family is obviously devastated because this person probably has many, you know, years to live. So they need medical care. They probably need housing. They need to maybe get into assisted living. So we have a really, if I could do nothing else today, I guess it's just to educate briefly. Again, I know you touched on it in another show, but Arizona has a very unique law, a mental health power of attorney. I believe it's one, if not the only states that has this. And it essentially is a power of attorney, like your medical or financial power of attorney, that you can sign when the person is early enough on in their illness to understand what they're signing. So it's best that everyone goes in with all their parents and families and gets these signed. Essentially, it allows family to take them in and get some type of mental health treatment, which Alzheimer's almost indefinitely, you get that at some point. People get some symptoms where they need mental health treatment. And this one document can save people a lot of time, money, and, just a lot of family frustration. And it's a very crucial document that we have access to here in Arizona.
And we actually had a show that went into a little bit more detail about that. Michelle Gones, who is an attorney, mm-hmm. who was really helpful in giving information about how to proceed along those lines. And that was a January 10th show, 2015. And you can access it on our Dr. Talk blog, which is drtalkblog.com.
And if you have any other, if you want to go back and look at some of the postings related to that and mental health law, we also posted a lot of resources available in different states and national resources for helping people with medical power of attorneys and mental health power of attorneys. And you can find that on our Facebook page as well. That's hashtag Dr. Talk.
Because the disease is frustrating enough, so you don't want any more added problems is why that, in my opinion, is important.
So absolutely. So, Mary Beth, you are more involved at the end of these, at the end of the disease, right? Because these people are now being cared for often in hospice. So can you sort of go into a little more detail about how you become involved?
I'd be happy to. So, first of all, a lot of people don't even know that there's a hospice benefit for people with dementia. When they think about hospice, they think about cancer. So first, we want families to know about this. And why do we? Because we don't only serve the person, the patient, we serve the family. And this has been a very long and perhaps one of the most difficult journeys they've ever been on. And so they need support services as well. A lot of people don't receive hospice service for dementia because they don't know that Alzheimer's disease is a terminal condition.
Well, it's because as physicians, we do, and I know that it's the sixth leading cause of death in the United States, and that's usually because somebody suffers from a complication from having the Alzheimer's disease. So they normally die of, as families think of, well, he didn't die of Alzheimer's, he died of pneumonia. He lost the ability to swallow, and then he choked in his sleep. So they don't make that association, and I think that's what you're really trying to help our listeners understand, is that process happened because of the Alzheimer's.
Exactly. And so because they don't understand that it's terminal and it's more viewed from a chronic perspective, they don't get their ducks in a row, so to speak, about how are we going to move forward in the future. Maybe I need to have the discussion with my loved one about the healthcare decisions. So often people with dementia rarely have their advanced directives completed, which is a very interesting situation considering that they're going to lose their ability to think and to have verbal language. You would think that they'd want to be in control of that. And so at Hospice of the Valley, we realized that the hospice model was more of a cancer model and that one size doesn't fit all. And so we designed a dementia program in 2003 in order to truly specialize in comfort care for the individual, because a diagnosis of dementia, that's not when life ends. You can still experience joy and pleasure and love and dignity and respect and connection with your creator, all of these things until you draw your last breath, when there are skilled clinicians to be able to provide that kind of care for you.
So at what stage then in the disease do you become involved? I mean, it's a sort of slow failure of our organs eventually, right, which may take some people out if there isn't a superimposing complication, as Carrie was saying. So when do you come into the picture?
So from a hospice perspective, as you know, Center of Medicare, Medicaid Services, CMS, they're the people who draw up the eligibility criteria for dementia. And so to them, this is what it looks like. A person is no longer able to feed themselves, dress themselves, bathe, walk. They have very few words left in their verbal communication. They're incontinent of bowel and bladder. They're losing weight. Even when feeding techniques are really good, their body is just starting to lose weight. And over the past year, this is the critical difference between having advanced dementia and being hospice eligible. Over the past year, we're starting to see that the body, in spite of medical advances, is taking over. So we're starting to see repeated infections, such as pneumonia or upper urinary tract infections, maybe some deep bed sores, multiple bed sores. So the real breakdown of the body. When we see those clinical medical indications, we know that the person's coming to end of life.
So there's no time limit on how long they can be with you? Is that right?
Well, the way that the regulations are set up is hospice is using your best clinical judgment if you think the person has 6 months or less to live. And clinically, that might be easy to prognosticate in certain diseases, like certain cancers, but in dementia, it's very difficult because that last stage, the advanced stage of dementia, lasts 1 to 3 years. So yes, we do our best to prognosticate, and we don't expect families to know. They can discuss with their healthcare providers or just call Hospice of the Valley and ask for a free consult for a nurse to come out and to help them make informed decisions.
And I was going to say, that's where the palliative care program has really jumped in and helped so many families, because that caveat when you approach, you know, when you're trying to justify this to the kind of a government entity that's paying for it, and they want you to put this artificial timeline of 6 months, is really scared away families and doctors from prescribing hospice. And so now, you know, you have the development of the palliative care model, which has allowed you to kind of push those guidelines a little differently and still be there as a support model for the family. So will you go into a little bit more detail on that, Mary Beth?
Yes. So what we've learned on the back end of the disease is that there are so many simple things that if the caregiver only understood that we could make the person with dementia so much more comfortable, maximize their comfort, but optimize their quality of life, and also reduce the stress and empower the caregivers so that the trajectory of the progression of the disease is so much better for everyone involved. So we created a palliative care for dementia program, and it provides in-home visits by dementia educators. It provides doctor consultations by experts. It also has, you know, as you know, being in the business, the crisis don't happen, you know, 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, right?
Never, ever.
So what's really important for dementia caregivers is that this palliative care for dementia program offers a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week phone line with skilled social workers or nurses in order to be able to support the families. And it also offers 4 hours of respite a week, which when you're a dementia caregiver is priceless.
Mike, let's bring you into this. I mean, this is obviously, you follow people from the early, you help them, I guess, get the diagnosis of Alzheimer's. You help them through the treatment options for it, and then you carry them through this end-of-life care that Mary Beth is talking about. How do you see hospice's role in helping families with Alzheimer's?
You know, I think it's all those services. Any stress that you can take off the caregiver burnout, whether it's the family member or caregivers that are brought in, is just the biggest factor that drives, you know, the discomfort of the patient. So any factors to alleviate people's stress, educate them on how to make it less stressful, you know, I just see that as a huge tool that's probably one of the biggest factors that get in the way of this end of life process.
And if I might add, you know, a lot of the behaviors that are so stressful to the caregiver and the person with dementia are preventable if we modify the environment and keep the person engaged in things that bring them pleasure. And it's those simple pieces of knowledge that can make all of the difference.
Because we've really had our hands, you know, I know all the prescribers here will know, a lot of people has had their hands tied with prescribing medications in these populations with all these warnings from the FDA. So all these other strategies, my guess is the push will be to continue to be limiting, you know, medications that are going to be approved for this population. So all of these factors can eliminate the need for medications in a safer way and kind of avoid some of those complications. Sometimes medicine's necessary, but more often than not, you can avoid using the medications with techniques that, you know, these programs offer.
So how can listeners learn more about your involvement at Hospice of the Valley? Do you have a contact?
Yes, I do. First of all, the general number for Hospice of the Valley is 602-530-6900. So 602-530-6900. Or go to www.hov.org.
That's perfect.
And also, I want to throw out one more website, and we will be posting this information on our Facebook page and on our blog as well. But for general Alzheimer information, there's a great national website, www.alz.org. So you're listening to Dr. Talk. We're here in the studio talking about Alzheimer's on Money Radio 1510 AM, 99.3 FM.
When you're driving down the road, the last thing you want to think about is tires. Trust Discount Tire to get you up to speed with the right tire for your vehicle. We carry the world's best brands of tires, all at everyday low prices. At Discount Tire, we're not just about tires, we're about people. We'll get you the right tire for your vehicle to help keep you safe on the road. Stop by any Discount Tire store for a free air pressure and tire safety check. Your low price journey starts here. Discount Tire.
Join board-certified and personal physician Dr. Carrie Bordinko every Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. on Money Radio 1510 a.m. and 99.3 FM for Dr. Talk, where we put healthcare back in your hands. Each week, we'll have a full panel of nationally known medical experts as guest speakers, taking an in-depth look at the issues that affect us all and matter most. Tune in this Saturday at 1 p.m. for Dr. Talk.
Your healthcare, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
So welcome back to Dr. Talk. We're here in the studio with Dr. Michael Yasinski, who is a psychiatrist, and Mary Beth Gallagher, who is with the Hospice of the Valley program for our dementia patients. So we mentioned a lot about how to diagnose it, things we can do, but what can we do to make life more pleasant for these patients? For instance, are there drug therapies that you would look at?
Yeah, let me just touch on drug therapies, and Mary Beth can talk about the alternative to that. I think the classic medicines we have, Aricept and Namenda, slightly slow down the progression of the disease. They really haven't panned out to do a whole lot for the disease of Alzheimer's, frankly. Where I come in as a psychiatrist, day-to-day quality of life with families and the patient is, you know, treating the symptoms. So they're depressed, they get obsessive, they get delusional and paranoid and start accusing their spouse of stealing money. We can treat some of that, especially early on, to really make everyone's quality of life better. We're not fixing the underlying cause, but everyone's much happier, calmer, and there's certainly a role for medication. So we're not going to stop the illness or prevent it, but we can certainly make everyone have a better quality of life.
And what sort of things do you offer that can be helpful for these patients?
So we need to identify the limitations of what the person can no longer do. It's important to keep them safe and also to anticipate the needs that this person has that they no longer can verbally communicate, because we want to maximize comfort in body, mind, and spirit. So also what we want to do is we want to celebrate whatever residual abilities this person has. And using the five senses, or however many this person has left, we can do so many things in order to bring pleasure, joy, meaningful connection without words, deep heart-to-heart kind of connections. Music. So many people have seen the viral video from the documentary Alive Inside that shows the power of music, because the last parts of the brain to deteriorate are parts that process music. So it's such such a beautiful coupling, you know, and we use music extensively at Hospice of the Valley. It's got to be tailored to the need of the individual, right? One person's musical heaven is another person's musical heaven.
That could be
clearly. Yeah. And you know what? The same thing with food. Food is so much more than nutrition, right? It's love. So chocolate, no matter how demented I may become, it will make me happy.
That's going to make a lot of listeners happy to hear that.
Yes. So when, you know, at Hospice of the Valley, if it's chocolate that makes you happy, then that's what you're going to get. You know, that's going to be your prescribed plan of treatment. Also forms of touch, certain smells that just transcend, you know, all of the different sensory experiences. And we want to focus in on any spiritual practice that the person has as well.
And the last thing to go is the long-term memory. So smell and touch and bringing up, I mean, that's sort of really key to keeping them happy as long as we can.
Yes, because it's deeply embedded in their personhood. So the person is still in there, you know, and we want to appeal to the emotions. Emotions are very sticky, even for people who have dementia, and can make all of the difference. And then the last thing I was going to say, though, is caregiver approach and environmental modification to make an environment feel safe and relaxing and loving, and the way that we go near the person, all of that is so important and can absolutely minimize the need for psychiatric medications.
So now we're going to head into what we do in our last segment on every show, is we're going to talk and actually ask questions. We're going to put you guys on the spot as the guests here today for the myth versus fact. So these are very common statements made out in the community, and we want to help our listeners have some good clarity to know if this is accurate or not. So I'm going to lead off with the first one, and this is going to go over to you, Michael. Memory loss is just a natural part of aging. What do you say, myth or fact?
I'll say myth to that one.
Why? You have to say more than just the answer. You have to explain it out.
Well, it seems like every time I'm on the show, I focus on functional impairment. So I will default to say if it's really a functional issue, right? We all forget, but is it causing day-to-day functional problems? It's interfering with some piece of your life on some regularity. I would say that's when that transition happens, where go get checked out, and that's not normal part of aging. We don't have to suffer functional impairments.
Okay. That was a good answer. I like that one.
Okay, so myth number two, Alzheimer's disease is not fatal.
We're going to give that one to Mary Beth.
Oh, thanks. Okay. So what happens is when you have Alzheimer's disease, it may start off in certain parts of the brain, but as the disease progresses, it moves through more and more parts of the brain. And one of the things that will happen is that a person's swallowing will be impacted to the point of, even if they don't choke on food per se, saliva has bacteria in it. And somebody can have what's called a silent aspiration, where the saliva goes into their air pipe and it sets them up for pneumonia, which is the most common cause of death for people with dementia. But may I also add that it is one of the most comfortable ways to die, researchers have found, when it's treated by hospice and palliative care providers. It's very comfortable and the person gets sleepier. We treat any symptoms of discomfort and they pass on in their sleep.
That's still a huge education dilemma. I was trying to figure out which word I wanted to use here with families to explain to them that this, once again, you've said it's a terminal diagnosis. And how do you choose to make that exit? And the pneumonia one is a common one, as we all know as practitioners, and we've been bedside for these. But it's really hard to tell the family that that's comfortable.
That's a tough issue with families. That's an educational piece on how to let that, where to see that exit.
Yes.
Where to see that exit strategy in terms of, you know, bowing out where it's best for everybody involved.
But it's so important, because remember that a whole lot of people who have dementia are dying in intensive care units, intubated and restrained. Although there's no benefit to that, that's where the choice has them end up. And most people are asked that if they should get dementia, they want to die at home. They want to be kept comfortable. But it does not match the reality of what is occurring.
Yes. So again, very important to sort of talk about this as early on as possible and make sure that the whole family has clear directives.
I've got another one for Mike sitting over here. Drinking out of aluminum cans or cooking in aluminum pots and pans can lead to Alzheimer's. And I want to also throw in there, people have also used the term deodorants that have aluminum in them. All have been linked in the lay press, which is your mainstream media, that these cause Alzheimer's. True or false?
I think the evidence at this point says that's false. There's no good evidence to back that up. I know I drink out of aluminum cans all day long, so I'm
so
very...
So if you can't remember, come to the show next time.
I'm doing okay at this point, and no, I believe there's no evidence that I've seen that actually links these things to Alzheimer's.
How about aspartame, which is the same as NutraSweet? And what is the other name for it?
Equal.
Equal, thank mm-hmm. you. Any
also in my
on
Diet Coke cans that I'm drinking.
Yes, yes. Actually, that's what I'm asking you. any feelings about aspartame? Actually, when you look up on the FDA website, they basically say no. There's no scientific evidence, which
it's one of those you see a lot of health. Yeah, I don't know if I've seen the evidence pinned on it, but it certainly doesn't sound, from my understanding, it has a lot of health benefits.
Right, I know.
I think we could, devoid of the issue of Alzheimer's, we could come up with a litany of other reasons you probably do not want to put that in your body. So
absolutely.
Cancers, diabetes, we could go down that list.
But no direct link from what I've seen.
Okay. So flu shots, can they increase the risk of Alzheimer's disease? Myth or fact? Either of you, we can lay in on this one.
Okay, I'm going to jump in on this one. I'm the primary care doc. I can answer this one. So for flu shots, there is a theory linking flu shots to an increased risk of Alzheimer's that was proposed in South Carolina. This also has not panned out to show. I mean, I think that there's a lot of things that have been linked to vaccinations, especially in our younger population and autism. So anything related to vaccines and brain issues, you know, there's always a concern about it. But we are protecting our elderly more by giving them the flu vaccine and preventing these pneumonias and things that can make them very ill, put them in the hospital, and ultimately lead to death, far more than we are running any risk of creating any type of an Alzheimer's with the patients.
I concur. So all people with Alzheimer's disease will eventually become violent and aggressive. Is that true?
Not all of them, but go ahead, Mary. You speak to that.
Thank you. Yeah, I would say that, you know, Maya Angelou says, when we know better, we'll do better. And I think that although some of the research suggests that up to 90% of people who have Alzheimer's disease will at some point along the trajectory of the disease exhibit behaviors, I think a lot of that is because caregivers don't really understand how to modify the environment to anticipate pain and to treat it and all of those unmet needs. So behaviors in a person with dementia actually are their only effective communication to say, I'm experiencing distress. And as we know better about how to care for people, we'll see a lot less behaviors.
Yes, I agree. So the frustration of being in that box where you can't communicate would definitely make me angry, or most of us angry.
Yes, and then the other thing would be a delirium. We know that that acute confusional state that can happen in some folks who get urinary tract infections or have a bad reaction to a medication, people with dementia are at very high risk for having that. So maybe that would be a cause of a behavior.
Absolutely.
And I think that leads us to the next question for you, Mary Beth, is people with Alzheimer's disease cannot understand what is going on around them. So this kind of leads right where you just left off.
Yeah, I would argue that they can. You know, there's all these different phrases that people say, loss of self and all this kind of stuff. But I choose to practice under the assumption that that individual is in there. You know, Alzheimer's disease is a disease of the brain, but it's not a disease of the heart and soul of this individual who still remains whole within. And so we need to be very sensitive to this person inside.
Well, we had quite a few more myth versus facts, but we're going to be running short on time, as we always do on every show. We always seem to have so much more information once we get going that we want to put out there to our listeners. But I want to say thank you to both of our guests today that joined us in the studio, Mary Beth Gallagher and Michael Yasinski. Remember, if you want to learn more about Dr. Yasinski, go to his website at yasinskipsychiatry.com. And you can also check out more that Hospice of the Valley has to offer by visiting their website as well. So hopefully you found this information today really informative on Alzheimer's disease. It's not just dementia. There are different forms out there. Stay tuned for future shows that we'll also have airing on different forms of dementia. And as always, we thank Dr. Yasinski for taking some time coming back and talking about.
Thanks for having me.
We always have tough topics for you. So
appreciate it.
Don't forget to like us on our Facebook page at Dr. Talk / Facebook.com, and as well, listen to prior shows on our blog page at #DrTalk. Hope you're having a great weekend, enjoying the beautiful weather, and tune in next week for more information on Dr. Talk.
You've been listening to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. If you missed any part of this show, please go to moneyradio.com and listen to the audio archive. For additional information or to have your questions answered live on the air, send an email to drtalkaz@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in to Dr. Talk this and every Saturday afternoon from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM. The information and opinions expressed in this broadcast are intended to address specific questions asked or situations described on this program and are not designed to constitute advice or recommendations as to any disease, ailment, or physical condition. You should not act or rely upon any information contained in this broadcast without seeking the advice of your personal physician. If you have any questions about the information or opinions expressed during this broadcast, please contact your doctor.
Join parents and experts at understood.org, a free online resource about learning and attention issues designed to help you help your child thrive in school and in life. Understood.org, because understanding is everything. Brought to you by Understood.org and the Ad Council.
Money is what we talk about. We're Money Radio 1510, KFNN Mesa Phoenix, and 99.3 FM K257.